From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Last Friday, the U.S. passed the Biden administration's goal of 100 million vaccines within his first 100 days. It came well ahead of schedule on day 58 of his administration, though, of course, some suggest he was setting a low bar. Nevertheless, an average of 2.2 million doses are being administered to people in America every day. Among those are essential migrant workers from other countries, some of whom work on farms and in meatpacking plants right here in Illinois. The U.S. has more than 1 million farm workers who come from Mexico every year on temporary work visas, and some, who are just beginning to arrive in Illinois, are getting the opportunity to be vaccinated. We're joined now by two reporters who've been covering vaccinations in these hard-to-reach migrant populations and communities. Dana Cronin is an agriculture reporter with Illinois Newsroom and Harvest Public Media. Hello, Dana. Welcome back to The 21st.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And Christine Herman is a health reporter for Illinois Newsroom and Side Effects Public Media. Hello, Christine. Welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Brian.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation also at 800-222-9455, especially if you live in a rural area. Have you been vaccinated? Maybe you're a farmer. Have you or any of your fellow farmers or farmhands had trouble getting access to the vaccine? Give us a call. Again, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Okay, Dana, I'm going to begin with you. You spoke with farm workers getting vaccinated in Cobden, Illinois. Before we talk about that, more than, as I said a moment ago, more than half of farm workers in the U.S. are from Mexico. Can you tell us a little bit about their lives and livelihoods? What's it like being a migrant farm worker?
Sure. So there are different types of farm workers in the U.S. I think that's an important point to make. The ones that we spoke to down in Cobden were all here on H-2A visas, which is a visa program for temporary agricultural workers. The vast majority of H-2A workers in the U.S. are from Mexico, like you mentioned. So they're hired by a specific farm owner to come work on a specific farm for a certain amount of time. But there are also other migratory farm workers who travel seasonally within the U.S., including here in Illinois. And many that we've spoken with in Illinois are from the southern border region, specifically Texas. And there are also a lot of undocumented farm workers who travel here, often from Mexico, because they can make more money here than they can in their home countries.
So how has the pandemic affected this? I mean, is there... are there complications even crossing the border, given the restrictions that have been put in place?
Well, agricultural workers themselves have been hit really hard by the pandemic. According to researchers at Purdue University, hundreds of thousands of them have contracted the coronavirus and thousands have died due to COVID-19. Those numbers also include food processing plant workers. The migratory lifestyle can put them at a higher risk of contracting the virus, not to mention they often live and work in crowded conditions, which increases the risk of an outbreak. So the nature of their work has definitely made them very vulnerable throughout the pandemic. Surprisingly, though, the pandemic actually didn't have a huge impact overall on their ability to come into the U.S. to work. Participation in the H-2A program actually slightly increased over the past year. And, I guess you can chalk that up to the fact that the show must go on for food production, even during a pandemic.
Yeah, we all want to keep eating. That's one of those features of life we are not putting on pause. So, Dana, you spoke with some farm workers who had just gotten the COVID vaccine. What did you learn about that and the state of COVID vaccinations in Mexico, where many of them are coming from?
Right. Yeah. Christine and I talked to a group of H-2A workers that had just days before arrived from Mexico. And we met them moments after they got their first vaccine dose. And most of them expressed really just how grateful they were to have been prioritized here in the U.S. I want to play a clip from one of them. And keep in mind, we spoke to them in Spanish. This is 34-year-old Jorge Feria from Oaxaca.
Nosotros tenemos esa... We
have the fortune to come work through a visa and have a government that cares about the people that come to work in the fields. We are very grateful.
And Brian, we asked this group of workers whether they would have had the same access to the vaccine in their home country. And all of them said that no, they would not be vaccinated right now had they stayed.
Okay, Christine, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now. You and Dana spoke with a clinic in Southern Illinois that's eager to help vaccinate vulnerable and hard-to-reach populations, including farm workers, but they have faced some challenges. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Brian. So I want to just explain a little bit about community health centers. These are clinics. They're all over the country. There's 52 in Illinois. They see patients regardless of insurance or ability to pay. They've been around since the 1960s. They were established as part of the Civil Rights Act. They were created to fill healthcare gaps in underserved communities. So one of those clinics in Southern Illinois is the Shawnee Health Service. They have a farm worker health program, which is led by Carla Grathler. And we've been in touch with her, you know, throughout the pandemic. And, you know, when the vaccine rollout was starting to happen, there's basically allocations to the states that are then divvied up to the local health departments and community health centers, at least at the very beginning, were not able to get the vaccine directly to be able to administer the doses themselves to the people they serve in their communities. So Carla was explaining they've had to point their patients to other nearby clinics, like whichever one is the closest, you know, and there can be barriers for some people who don't have transportation or for whom there's a language barrier. So Carla has basically said they've been eager to get doses themselves to be able to administer the vaccine to the patients, to the roughly 300 farm workers they serve every year, some who live in the area and are settled here, and others who, as we've been discussing, travel in. But it's been slow, like vaccine rollout has been slow in many places. So in the absence of being able to get the vaccine themselves, they've been partnering with the state health department. They have an Office of Minority Health to bring the vaccine to the areas where the workers are arriving. So, you know, in late February, there was the first dose vaccine clinic. And that's where Dana and I went and met these workers who were able to get the vaccine because the state came in, brought the doses, partnered with Shawnee Health Service, and were able to make it convenient for the workers who are arriving in that area. And now hopefully that will change soon because the federal government has been, you know, launched a program to start getting the vaccine directly to community health centers like Shawnee Health Service. So even Shawnee down in their Murfreesboro location, they're going to start running clinics themselves starting next week. And then do that on a regular basis. And the state health department says they'll continue to do these pop-up vaccination clinics to kind of fill in the gaps as well.
I was going to ask, has supply been a problem here, or is it a demand issue? Is there hesitancy? I mean, as we've heard about with other various populations?
Yes, it's all of the above. You know, so yeah. I talked to the head of the Illinois Primary Healthcare Association, Cyrus Winnett, and he said, you know, community health centers have been involved to varying degrees with vaccine rollout. The supply issue is tricky. The state is having to figure out how to prioritize which clinics get doses first. And it's tricky when there's limited supply. But, you know, there is also the demand issue. That's something Carla told us about. I'm sorry, the hesitancy issue, because some of the workers she's talked to, you know, like many other populations, they've heard things. They have concerns. They don't understand how the vaccine works. What is this you're putting into my body? And she's had to do outreach and education to try to answer some of those questions and build trust. And, you know, the people we've talked with say, you know, people like Carla are kind of critical to addressing vaccine hesitancy and making sure that, you know, one, that the vaccine is available, but two, also that the people who it's available to are willing to receive it.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about vaccines for migrant farm workers and other hard-to-reach communities, particularly in rural Illinois. I'm speaking with Christine Herman, who we've just heard there. She's a health reporter for Illinois Newsroom and Side Effects Public Media, and Dana Cronin, an agriculture reporter with Illinois Newsroom and Harvest Public Media. Dana, you reported on how the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine might be an easier, quicker way to get farm workers vaccinated. Just as a refresher, I'm sure our dedicated 21st listeners know this well, but it's a lot easier to administer. It doesn't require as much sort of ultra refrigeration as one of the two-step vaccines does. But the Illinois Department of Health has said that they're not going to use the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And we have a clip from your reporting. Can you set this up for us?
Sure, yeah. When Christine and I attended this pop-up vaccination clinic for farm workers, we spoke with a regional health officer. Her name is Omaira Giacello. And we asked her about the J&J vaccine and whether they had planned to use it for future pop-up clinics. And here is what she told us.
Might be, oh, really? You're going to give them that because they're African-American, because they're migrants? You know, like, they should be given the same rights as someone that's Anglo-Saxon, get that Moderna or the Pfizer that's being offered.
And right off the bat, I just want to say that all three vaccines are safe and 100% effective at preventing hospitalization and death. And, you know, over and over, I've heard from public health experts that the best vaccine is the one that becomes available to you first. That being said, it's no big secret that they each have different efficacies and that the Johnson & Johnson vaccines is slightly lower. And public health officials, including Omaira Giacello, said that that's why they weren't planning to distribute J&J to more vulnerable, hard-to-reach communities, because it's perceived as the lesser vaccine. And we were surprised to hear that because, you know, you just mentioned that it's a single shot, which is just easier logistically. It doesn't require that ultra cold storage like the other two. So it's, you know, theoretically easier to bring to these pop-up vaccine clinics in more rural areas. I should note, though, that Omaira Giacello, who we heard in that clip, told us that the plan for now is to stick with Pfizer, but that may change going forward.
Yeah. And what are other states doing about this? I mean, Iowa, I gather, does not have the same stance on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in these, you know, at least for these populations.
Correct. Yeah. Iowa actually adopted sort of the opposite strategy with their initial shipments of the J&J vaccine. They actually allocated many of those to meatpacking plant communities specifically. And in a press release, they basically said that these communities had been hit hard by the pandemic and that this, you know, one and done vaccine would cut down on logistical barriers to vaccinating them as quickly as possible.
All right, Christine, just a few minutes remaining in our conversation. I do want to address, though, this idea that we're going to imagine that there are some people out there who are hearing, wait, we are vaccinating workers from foreign countries here on visas and undocumented people before American citizens. I wonder, what would you say to people who might be thinking that? What should they consider in response to that idea?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one more clarification on the state health department. They are using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in many other locations, like mass vaccination clinics. It's specifically for these pop-up clinics that are targeting hard-to-reach populations that they're trying to, that at least for now, they're sticking with the Pfizer vaccine. But yes, to that point, Brian, yeah, about half of all farm workers who work in the U.S. Lack work authorization. They're undocumented. That's according to some federal data. And so that's led some to question whether they should be prioritized for the coronavirus vaccine when the Biden administration first published a vaccination strategy. It outlined that they aim to ensure everyone can receive the vaccine once they're eligible, regardless of immigration status. And that's a stance that some Republican members of Congress have criticized. But public health experts have pushed back, saying that vaccinating people, regardless of their immigration status, is good public health practice because, you know, it's a longstanding public health principle that infection anywhere affects the health of everyone. You know, that's something that Dr. George Benjamin with the American Public Health Association shared with Kaiser Health News in an interview. So, you know, and as the past year of COVID outbreaks among ag workers illustrates, they're a vulnerable population. So, and they're the backbone of the U.S. food system, who were deemed essential at the start of the pandemic. And they have these risk factors, living in crowded settings, traveling on buses to the fields, that put them at greater risk of contracting the virus. So that's the case for making sure farm workers are prioritized for the vaccine, early on in the rollout. And it varies by state, but Illinois is one of the states that followed the CDC guidance to include agricultural workers in phase 1B.
Yeah, I guess the succinct way of saying that maybe is the COVID virus does not, or the virus that causes COVID does not care about papers or documented status. Dana, last question to you, and we have just about a minute remaining. What are you keeping an eye on going forward as these vaccinations continue in these hard-to-reach communities?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, while the vaccine is rolling out in a lot of these communities, it's important to remember that the pandemic is not over yet. And as long as agricultural workers are still working, we need to make sure that, you know, they have continued access to vaccines and in the meantime, even to COVID testing. So Christine and I plan to continue following that.
All right. And Christine, maybe just a few sentences on what you are watching as we go forward.
Right. I think I'm paying attention to how these community health centers are able to continue to play a role in vaccine rollout, you know, because they're the ones, as I described, that have these relationships and the trust built with these hard to reach vulnerable communities, as we've been discussing.
Christine Herman and Dana Cronin are both reporters with Illinois Newsroom, my colleagues at Illinois Public Media. And Christine also works with Side Effects Public Media, Dana with Harvest Public Media. Dana and Christine, congratulations. I know you worked really hard on this series, and thanks for sharing it with us today on the 21st.
Thanks, Brian.
Coming up after a short break, we're going to be talking about a program that the state of Illinois is putting in place to encourage millennials to become homeowners by helping them with student debt, which is a big obstacle to home ownership. Plus, it's Passover again. This is one of the second major holidays to come up twice during the pandemic. We're going to be speaking with a rabbi about how that will look this year. That's all coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.